Blog Talk Radio.
Ability to
protect my Victoria from my cold, dead hands.
So, that was an interesting presentation.
Yeah, it does. But it's like, like everything. You know, that not everybody is keenly gun-ho on giving away their guns. And I totally agree with him on that. It's just that on the assault weapons, you know, there's room to move there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was banned once before. It should have been banned again. Nobody needs a damned assault weapon. I don't think. Unless we're in war, we're not. At least I'm not.
I mean, I'm not a gun enthusiast myself, for me.
Yeah.
But I certainly think people should enjoy the right to own them if they want
to.
But I'm not a fan of assault rifles, and I don't think that that's necessary for hunting or sport or anything like that. The only they're for war.
Basically, that's it.
So,
my next article, I wanted to read this because this came up. That we've been talking about this for a long time, you know, on the show, and about aspartame and the nightmare that it is. And it's in all our, it's in so much food now, taking the place of sugar.
USDA, school lunch reform rules, a complete hoax. Here's the proof. This is from naturalnews.com. With a huge fanfare and an overdose of propaganda, the U.S. government is announcing it's going to reform school lunches and vending machines to eliminate junk beverages like soda. Under new rules, the Department of Agriculture proposed Friday, school vending machines would start selling water, lower calorie sports drinks, diet soda, and baked chips instead, reports the Washington Post. Except here's the problem. We heard the same hoax 6 years ago when Bill Clinton was widely applauded for achieving the very same reform back then. Forbes.com practically drooled over the leadership of Clinton when it announced in 2006, under the agreement, the companies have agreed to sell only water, unsweetened juice, and low-fat milk to elementary and middle schools, while high schools will be allowed diet drinks, unsweetened teas, flavored water, and low-calorie sports drinks. Hold on a sec. Why is the USDA saying it's going to ban sugary sodas in 2013 when Forbes.com reported that Bill Clinton really already solved the problem in 2006? Well, because it's a hoax. 4 years after Bill Clinton's supposed victory in soda manufacturers, sodas have vastly expanded their reach into U.S. schools. The U.S. government is in bed with junk food manufacturers.
The U.S. government has no intention of hurting the profits of its most powerful supporters, food and drug corporations. Forcing school lunches to become healthier means reduced profits for the processed food giants that supply all the genetically modified, chemically preserved, refined, processed, nutrient-deprived crap that our children are raised on. The goal of the USDA, the same department that has completely sold out to Monsanto, for the record, is to make it appear like they are doing something to improve the health of children, while in actuality doing nothing to restrict the profit growth of junk food companies. Remember, we've seen the same hoax before back in 2006 when Bill Clinton, that too was praised something of a treaty with junk food companies and soda manufacturers. But as I said back then, it was all a publicity stunt designed to delay any legislation. And it worked. No laws were passed and the soda continues to be sold to children all across our nation's schools.
The other big reason the whole thing is a charade is because it doesn't restrict diet sodas. So even if the corn syrup sodas are pulled out of schools, it puts the government in the position of promoting aspartame consumption by our children. Aspartame is even worse for your health than corn syrup. Only a completely insane government full of nutritionally ignorant morons would aspartame be pushed on children. The substance should never have been approved for human consumption in the first place. When stored in high condition, it produces formaldehyde, a potent neurotoxin that harms the nervous system. Pushing aspartame on children is sure to lower academic scores, create behavioral problems, and promote chronic diseases as those children age. But the U.S. government incessantly protects aspartame, mercury-laden vaccines, GMOs, and other mass-marketed poisons. The payoff is huge for Big Pharma when then they rake in trillions of dollars treating all chronic diseases caused by a lifetime of poison consumption. That's the racket being played out right now in America, and it's all marketed under the label of healthy children.
Remember, above all, the government always lies to you. Telling the truth serves no purpose for it, and it is no morals or ethics to speak of. These lies are designed to create the impression that the government cares for you. Obamacare, remember? While in reality, it is looting your pockets, sickening your children, destroying your liberties, and crushing dissent. That is what's going on, folks, with aspartame and these healthy school lunches. I guess over this stuff, I really do.
This is a good one.
What?
Super Bowl. I like this.
I came across, but I had written a similar article yesterday on this. It's called the Booty Bowl. That's on my website. But
this is from the Village and Citizen. The 2013 Mercedes Super Bowl commercial and its occult message. The Super Bowl has become much more than a football game. It's a multifaceted event that mixes sports entertainment with the music industry and big corporation advertisement, monopolizing mass media attention for days. This unique yearly event is watched by hundreds of millions of people worldwide and is therefore a giant platform for the all-code elite to push its agenda. Even worse, it's becoming an increasingly blatant celebration of the Illuminati industry. Super Bowl advertisements are also a big part of the show. They are probably more discussed and analyzed than the actual football game. This year, Mercedes stepped into the Super Bowl commercial arena with a cinematic ad promoting a new car model. While it does a good job selling the car, it also communicates other messages to the Super Bowl audience. In short, it is the elite delivering a message about who's running the show. The ad is based on the Faustian concept of selling one soul for fame and riches, a favorite of the Illuminati industry. In less than 2 minutes, the ad manages to pack some telling symbolism and some realness about the entertainment industry. There's the ad, but there's him.
Yeah, I know.
The ad begins with a guy admiring a billboard featuring the car in question. The devil then pops up and tells him, "Make a deal with me, kid, and you can have a car and everything that goes along with it." The guy takes the pen and then envisions what would happen if he made a deal with the devil. Apparently, what would happen to him would be pretty darn cool. According to the ad, this is what happens when you sell your soul. You become a celebrity and get to take the hottest girl of the moment. This year it's Kate Upton. Get to party with giants of the music industry such as Usher. You become the it person and your face is featured on magazine covers. You also drive a nice car, having girls run after you, and you become a race car champ. So extremely cool. Such a great deal. Back to reality. The guy looks at the contract that was presented to him by the devil. The symbol of the devil is apparently the reverse of the ancient Chiron symbol that was adopted by the Catholic Church and as the symbol of Christ. If you look at it, you can notice that the small hourglass-shaped symbol at the left of the inverted P is similar to the Illuminati sign that was between Usher and the guy. Yep, the devil owned that club. Let's go back. Right there. There it is. Looking closer at the devil's ring, we see that on top is clearly Messiah.
Uh-huh.
Why would this specific symbol be there? It refers to a real, powerful, secret society. There are many symbolic messages in this short commercial. The guy then realizes that his car is affordable enough for him, so not to sell his soul in order to abstain it. Good for you, guy, whoever you are. The ad ends with some subtle occult numerology. There's fire on the 13th of 2013. 13 is probably the most important number in Masonic and occult numerology. It being highlighted is another way of saying that those behind the ad are in the know. So while the guy did not fall for the devil's trap, the ad nevertheless showed what is required to rise up to the highest ranks of the entertainment industry. One must make a deal with an evil entity that is apparently a member of a secret society, who then magically gets you into all the right places in music, fashion, and sports. Yes, all of this was conveyed in the short advertisement for car. Is this another way of the elite to brag about how it runs the show? One thing is for sure, all the Super Bowl audiences will soon absorb that message, and some will buy that car. Interesting. Since I didn't watch the Super Bowl, I didn't see the advertisement on there.
Yeah, it was pretty much so. I saw it on here. It's not worth the play. I think the important thing, you know, is, this is the trivial aspect of it. He didn't tell you that it cost Mercedes $4 million to over $4 million to run that ad, because it was over a minute long.
Yeah.
And they were charging $4 million for 30-second ads on a Super Bowl.
Because all those people got to watch it.
But the thing that they didn't mention, which I touched on in my article, mm-hmm. was is that they put the Sandy Hook choir up there.
Yeah, but that they were talking about this particular ad. They weren't.
Yeah, no, that ad, but that ad is just one part of the.
Part
of the show. And that there were many more satanic ads, you know, in that program.
I'm sure there were.
A tremendous number of them. And you know, it's not just that. I mean, the whole booty call thing that Beyonce was doing is just, you know, bizarre. It was sexual nature, you know, played off against the violence of football. And then, you know, and then paired off
with the children's
choir of 20 murdered kids, you know, the children that they could stand up for. It's just a whole ritual.
I didn't like it. I didn't like the symbolism, and I didn't watch it. And I don't like the fact that
that whole halftime was like this a big.
I don't like those
ceremony.
I don't like those halftime shows. All it is a chance to promote the industry, the music industry, to promote their garbage. Most of it is garbage that they have on there. I haven't liked the people that they've had in recent years. They've had openly satanic people, you know, devil worshippers. I don't care for that. I'm not interested in it, and I don't like it promoted to the public. And I also don't approve of the fact, I mean, I used to enjoy football because I was naive. I didn't realize the damage that was happening to the players. And now I recognize that hardly any of them get to enjoy the fruits of their labor. They're either so ill or so crippled, or they have no brains left, you know, or they die early.
You know,
I'm not sure I want to promote a game like that.
No, it's true. It's kind of like wrestling.
Yeah.
It's like the same as wrestling.
The old throw them to the lions instead
and
we
they,
let
they
them gladly, bang up each other. I don't know.
They gladly go. You know,
I don't know. I don't like it, Leo.
That's how they make their...
I don't enjoy watching that.
That's how they make their dough, you know?
I'm sure.
They could be things doing it. But anyway...
I didn't like any of it. There isn't anything that I like about it anymore.
Okay. Oh, you're...
Oh, here's an interesting... FBI arrests Malcolm X's grandson en route to Iran. And let's go to that article. It's very short.
Okay.
He's a handsome guy. That's a good guy. Probably a smart guy. Malcolm X was smart.
I thought I was going to Iran.
Global Research. He has the right to go there.
No, I know, but you know what I'm talking about.
It's disturbing to say the least that an American citizen can be arrested by the FBI for participating in an international film festival held in a country which is disliked by the Obama administration, namely Iran. Deafening silence of the U.S. media. Reported by Press TV, the grandson of Malcolm X was arrested by FBI agents on his way to Iran to participate in a film festival. According to Press TV, Muslim civil activist Malcolm Shabazz was reportedly arrested before starting his scheduled visit to Tehran to attend a conference on Hollywoodism, sources outside of the United States confirmed on Monday. The FBI has refused to provide any information about his whereabouts. Tehran hosted the third Hollywoodism International Conference on the sidelines of the 31st Fair International Film Festival in the Iranian capital of Tehran on Sunday. Many filmmakers, directors, actors, and movie critics, as well as politicians and economists, took part in the conference. Mike Gravel, he ran for president.
From Alaska.
Right. A former U.S. senator who attended the conference condemned Hollywood's role in imposing imperialistic views on the people of the world. Hollywood is just a tool of the American government and European governments to pursue their imperialistic views, whether it's in economy, culture, or religion, Gravel stated. The first Hollywoodism and cinema conference was held in Iran in 2011. We were going to support him, remember?
Yeah, that was in 2008, I think, was when he was running.
Uh-huh.
And
we didn't find out anything more about him.
Well, there was he actually made the first or so debate, and...
We thought he came out pretty well.
Yeah, he was okay.
We liked him.
But you know, he was further left than.
No chance of being left.
Yeah, you know, even though he made a lot of sense, Anyway, we're gonna move on a little bit here. This one bothered me very much when I read it. Haiti is open for exploitation, humanitarian pillage, and racism.
Continue.
Right. It's from Ukranet. Here we go. Okay. Beneath the dubious, duplicitous discourse of humanitarianism, humanitarian and development assistance to Haiti, economic exploitation continues in the consolidation of the free trade zone and creation of a mega assembly line in Caracol. Sakara Ekine traces this exploitation to the founding of the world's first black republic in 1804. The three-year anniversary of the 12th of January 2010 earthquake in Haiti was marked yet again by a floodgate of new reports, opinions, facts, and figures, a repetition of the past 2 years and the lack of progress in reconstruction, the use of Haitian people by non-government organizations, failures to provide housing and other basic amenities for hundreds of thousands who remain in the camps, and the exploitation of workers in the new, now open for business Haiti, as hailed by the overseer, President Martelly. To try to understand the logic of the present, the overseer, Western imperial relationship with Haiti, it is necessary to look back to 1804 and the founding of the Republic. Remember, readers might well say, yes, but what was 208 years ago, but a close examination show a surprising consistency in the subjugation and exploitation of the Haitian people, underpinned by a blatant and paternalistic racism and overall fear of the power of the black masses.
We should begin in 1825 with Francis' demand of indemnity of 150 gold francs as payment for the loss of the plantation economy, including slaves, in exchange for diplomatic recognition and thereby the ability to trade. The repayment of debt, which ended in 1947, cost Haiti as much as 80% of its national revenue. But debts continued to pile up. Borrowing to pay back the French debt resulted in new deaths occurred during the U.S. occupation from 1915 to 1934, a period which consolidated the U.S. imperial domination over the country. A new constitution abolished a law prohibiting foreign land ownership and thereby allowed U.S. companies to purchase huge tracts of land, displacing an estimated 50,000 peasants. In addition, a $40 million loan was provided along with the takeover of the National Bank and Treasury. The cycle of new debt for old has continued through to the post-earthquake period. In 1934, the U.S. ended its occupation, but not before creating two militarized forces, the National Guard and the Gendarmerie, which would be used to keep the population under tight control by successive dictatorships up until the brief presidency of Jean-Bertrand Aristide. Further loans of $250 million were provided to the Duvalier regime and $158 million to the U.S.-backed government of Henri Nafit by the World Bank. The Inter-American Development Bank also lent $110 million to the Haitian government prior to Aristide's presidency. It only agreed to lend his government a mere $12 million. This clear distinction between democratically elected leaders and U.S.-backed unelected leaders continued when in 2003 the IDB agreed a loan of $200 million, the majority of which was only dispersed after the kidnapping of President Aristide on the 29th of February, 2004. Aristide put it like this: "The reason is very clear. When it's people who are serious, who will spend money for the country, these foreign banks hold on to the money. When it's thieves who will misuse the money with their accolades, no problem." U.S. intervention in the Caribbean. Haiti was not the only Caribbean island subjected to the U.S. intervention and imperial power. Nearby Cuba was briefly under direct U.S. control and only agreed to Cuban independence on the condition that the U.S. retain rights to operate a military base at Guantanamo Bay. In fact, from the end of 1898, Spanish-American War, U.S. policies toward Cuba and Haiti have been intertwined with a mix of human subjugation, material exploitation, and vagrant disregard for international law. Much of this has been couched in the language of a humanitarian intervention, similar to the post-earthquake period. And who can forget the audacious U.S. invasion of Grenada in October 1983, which was preceded by various attempts at economic strangulation? Again, the justification was a rescue mission, as well as a preemptive strike against Americans being taken hostage, even though there was no evidence to suggest that this might happen. The three Caribbean nations, which have either attempted to or successfully established a common government by and for the people, have been victims of U.S. terror. And Naomi Paik also makes the point that the simultaneous renewal of the Guantanamo lease and the end of the Haitian occupation in 1934 are not isolated events. On the one hand, the U.S. required a permanent naval base in the Eastern Caribbean. On the other, an assembly line of cheap resistance-free labor. For this, a pact was made with Jean-Claude Duvalier and subsequently his son Baby Doc. The result of the violent regime of Duvalier was thousands of refugees fleeing to the U.S. Again, PAC explains the logic between the U.S. hostility towards Haitian refugees, which is a double-edged sword, thousands of black bodies on the shores of the U.S., and the fact of its own friendly, self-interested relationship with a brutal dictator is a double-edged sword. The U.S. attempted to shy away from this fact by claiming the refugees were economic rather than political. In a reality, this is an inseparable distinction. This is a very long article, Leo.
Yeah, no, that's okay. You can end it there. I just wanted to refer to people and know that things were not as cozy as they
Well, let's go down to the last paragraph.
It really just annoys the hell out of me that we're neglecting these people. Let's see. I have very briefly attended outline a few complex historical events and hope that it was interesting to seek out further reading.
He lists a whole bunch of things that you could read.
And he just says that the sources used in compiling this piece was Haiti's new dictatorship, Haiti. So you please go to that. You can go to it by going to uruknet.info. uruknet.info. They got a lot of good articles.
And it says Haiti is open for exploitation.
Yeah.
Humanitarian pillage and racism continue.
Yeah. It's true. It's true. Genocide in Iraq. You want me to take a little music break now?
Yeah, why don't you do that? You should rest your voice.
And I'd like to get to this article, Genocide in Iraq, the case against the UN Security Council and member states.
Mm.
And it proves a further, it proves a devastation. Genocide.
Okay, so let's go to a little music break.
Yeah.
So what do you have there?
I guess some blues.
Okay.
And I like the name. Everybody. We'll be back shortly.
For your listening. According to a report from the Combating Terrorism Center at West Point, anti-federalists who oppose the New World Order, as well as members of several other far-right wing activist groups, are potential terrorists with. West Point is the U.S. military academy that trains, educates, and prepares cadets for their service in the U.S. Army. The CTC, Combating Terrorism Center, at West Point was established following the events of September 11th because of the brief belief that strong initiative was needed to prepare cadets for the new environments that would be headed into upon graduating in the post-9/11 era. The CTC provides a unique terrorism-based education, and since its creation, the program has received international recognition for its studies, reports, and teachings on terrorism and terrorist threats. A new report from the CTC, however, suggests that far-right-wing political activists, not radical Islamic groups, are the new terrorist threat in America, and even goes so far as to say that those who oppose a new world order are potentially violent terrorists. One of the groups this report warns of is the modern anti-federalist group, which the report says contains people who believe that American political system has been hijacked by external forces interested in promoting a new world order, an idea that is confirmed by David Rockefeller in his book Memoirs and George W. Bush in various speeches. The CTC report goes on to say that these anti-federalists believe that the federal government has become corrupt and tyrannical because of its intrusion on the civil constitutional rights of the American people and support civil activism, individual freedoms, and self-government. According to the report, these people believe that the push for a tyrannical global government would result in disarming the American people, and their violence, the report says, may be directed toward the federal government itself and its proxies and law enforcement. The FBI and Department of Homeland Security have already released documents which suggest that anyone who has coffee grinders, coffee filters, goggles, and scientific equipment could be involved in converting CBR weapons and should be reported to local authorities. They have also stated that photographers should be monitored for potential terrorism, and they have released guidelines for suspicious activity reported at hotels. The newly released CTC report, which showcases the exploitation of people like Timothy McVeigh and the small wave of violence from right-wing groups in the 1990s, to suggest that all right-wingers are potentially violent and even loosely associates those who oppose the one-world government with skinheads, neo-Nazis, and the KKK is only a small example of the growing paranoia over terrorism and the expanding surveillance state in America. Why is all this report important? Regardless of personal ties to these groups, we must be asking the following question. If these people can be classified so easily as terrorists, what would prevent everyone from being a potential terrorist? Because according to the American policy, anyone suspected of terrorism can now be indefinitely detained without a trial. How about that?
That's pretty scary.
Uh-huh. That was in the Patriot Act.
Yeah. Pretty damn scary. So that's what they're teaching the people at West Point. Misuse of literally makes me figuratively insane. Alright, so anyway, we're going to go back to another article.
It's a good one, Five Ways to Beat Cancer.
Yeah, I thought so too, yeah.
You can come back to that if you want.
Actually, we can read that now because I'd like to go to the next page. There's a video there. But we can talk about this one. Today, more and more individuals are diagnosed with some type of cancer. But aren't we all programmed to think, this could never happen to me, and yet it does. Yes, it can happen to you, and between you, your partner, and your best friend, one of you may get it. So what exactly is going on in the world? Cancer is a relatively new disease and cause of death in history. And cause of death in history of mankind. 2007 and 2009 extrapolate that over 40% of all men and women today will be diagnosed with cancer in their lifetimes. That is almost 50%.
We can just jump right to the five ways to beat cancer.
That's what I'm going
to
do.
Cancerous. So when one exercises and increases circulation, Oxygenation improves and more nutrients will be carried into the cells. Poor eating habits to create proper building blocks for cell walls. Diet is a crucial weapon in your cancer fighting arsenal. You should eat organic whole foods whenever possible to reduce toxins. Increase your intake of essential fatty acids from organic cold pressed flax oil or fish oil. Cancer thrives on sugar and refined grains. Cut them out as much as possible and don't use artificial sweeteners as they are not healthy. Recently, new healthy sweeteners such as stevia, xylitol, and lactonado have become widely available. I'm not familiar with that.
Yeah.
Eat mainly alkaline foods. Stevia, foods that are acidic to the body consist of meats, poultry, fish, dairy products, eggs, junk food, soda, alcohol, coffee, grains, and cereals. These foods you want to minimize in your diet. Alkaline foods, on the other hand, consist mainly of fruits and vegetables. A good percentage to aim for is 75% alkaline foods and 25% acidic foods. This may be challenging in the beginning because many people's diets are the exact opposite. Once this becomes a bit more natural, general guideline to shoot for is 45% cooked fruits and vegetables and 30% raw fruits and vegetables and 25% grains, nuts, seeds, meat, fish, or poultry. There have, in addition, been research that shows the benefit of a 100% raw food diet in the treatment of cancer. The Gerson Institute in San Diego, California, provides an alternative to treating cancer. The Gerson therapy is a natural treatment that activates the body's extraordinary ability to heal itself through an organic vegetarian diet, raw juices, coffee, enemas, and natural supplements. Over the past 60 years, thousands of people have been cured of incurable diseases, including cancer, diabetes, heart disease, arthritis, and autoimmune disorders. Talk about food as a medicine. Support your body's ability to use oxygen to make energy. A nutrient vital in the production of energy in a cell is coenzyme Q10. If a cell doesn't have coenzyme Q10, it can't produce energy. Also, research shows that high-quality omega-6 oils increase oxygen transfer into cells. Remember, the more ways you attack cancer, the better your chances are of beating it. The best alternative cancer clinics in the world use multiple supplements and holistic treatments. They don't do just one thing. It's possible to do the same yourself. Cancer can be beaten, no doubt about it. People succeed all the time. The best way to beat cancer, though, prevent it.
So that's kind of a good thing. That was by the Weekly Times. And now we're going to go to the next page, which I wanted to. There was a video that I wanted to play us out on. I thought it was kind of good. Takes a minute for a page to turn.
I can see that.
Because Mature says, Depopulation should be the highest priority of U.S. foreign policies toward the Third World. Imagine
that. Depopulate him.
He was the primo guy for the Global 2000 report, which is a slaughter of innocents, people everywhere, around the world. I thought I had a good one for you folks, but it's a little longer than I expected. I thought I didn't look back. The one that really bothered me the most that I wanted to read, unfortunately, was the one on Bloomberg. Because Bloomberg has been a real pain in my side for a long time. You know, why he is still king of New York is beyond me. But, you know, what the guy does, what the guy said, what the guy wants to do is just so in your face against the Constitution, it's unbelievable. You know? But he doesn't care. He just, you know, comes out with this stuff. And this guy being, if this guy was ever close to the White House, it would be really frightening. Yeah, we'll just finish up with this tonight. I wish I had a shorter video, but I don't. And this one is not a video, but it's natural news. This is the hypocrisy of Bloomberg. This is from Natural News.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Bloomberg's armed guards accost a journalist who asks him to disarm his own security team.
Huh.
You understand, of course, that they are better than you are, more valuable to society than you, smarter than you, and that more than anything else, they are above the law and the rules which they apply to you and me, right? You know that their hypocrisy knows no bounds, because to them, they are not being hypocritical. Rather, they believe they are simply promoting such noble concepts as economic justice, fairness, and safety. And you know, they see anyone who opposes their point of view as Neanderthal, a fool, or worse, an extremist who must be silenced, persecuted, subdued, and dealt with for the good of society. Who am I talking about? I'm talking about an American political class whose ranks are growing and which is filled with do what I say and not what I do types, who have no problems with controlling every aspect of your life and dictating what you can and cannot do, but who have no intentions of living under the same rules they foist on the rest of us. Case in point, Michael Bloomberg, the narcissistic mayor of New York City, who, if he had his way, would not let residents of his city own so much as a BB gun to defend themselves.
Really?
Yeah, in defiance of the Second Amendment's guaranteed rights to keep and bear arms. Well, recently, billionaire Bloomberg, who was attending a U.S. conference on mayors in Washington, D.C., was confronted by a journalist from the talk radio network who approached
His Honor,
to ask some relevant and pointed questions about the right that shall not be infringed. And
according to the exclusive report from Breitbart.com, in an explosive exchange outside the U.S. Conference of Mayors meeting in Washington, D.C., security guards for the billionaire New York Mayor Bloomberg accosted senior talk radio network investigative reporter Jason Matera when he asked the mayor about his strong support for gun control. Specifically, as noted in a video of the encounter, Bloomberg is taped being surrounded by armed security guards in suits as Matera approaches. When the reporter draws near, he asks Bloomberg, in the spirit of gun control, will you disarm your entire security team? The mayor, obviously taken aback and caught off guard by Matera's simple, straightforward questions, stammered in reply, we'll get right back to you. So he'd like you disarmed, but he won't. unsatisfied and walking back and forth along the hasty perimeter of suited guards that formed an arc around Bloomberg, Matera asked, "Why can you defend yourself but not the majority of Americans?" Pressing the reporter added, "Look at the team of security you've got, and you're an advocate of gun control?" At that point, the video cuts to Matera in a different location, walking further down the streets of D.C. when one of the men who was guarding Bloomberg, who identifies himself as Officer Stockton, NYPD, stopped the reporter and asked him to produce a photo ID. Matera eventually complied, but first asked, "Is this standard procedure for the press?" When the officer persisted in asking for the photo ID, Matera pressed, wait, it's standard procedure to be questioning members of the press?" At that point, the officer reached inside his suit jacket and grabbed a pen as if to be writing something down, perhaps Matera's name. "You're going to write it down now?" he asked. "Oh, no, sorry," the officer replied. "Don't screw around with me." The video cut to a scene that appeared to be even further down the street. Officer Stockton was trailing Matera and can be heard asking him, "Mr. Matera, sir, do you have a date of birth?" "It's none of your business what my date of birth is," Matera said in reply. Matera has a history of getting rough treatment when asking liberal politicians hard questions. In 2011, for example, he was warned by Vice President Joe Biden when he confronted the BP over his use of a rape reference when discussing GOP opposition to a jobs bill offered by President Obama. "Let's get it straight, guy," Biden warned. "Don't screw around with me." "Hey, Joe, welcome to America, a nation our forefathers founded to get away from ruling class elitists like you and Bloomberg."
So, pretty sad.
Uh-huh. I wish we could get that video of that guy, Matera, trying to talk to Bloomberg.
Unfortunately, they don't have a tape of that.
No. I think it would be very interesting, don't you?
I think it's radio, not just a straight audio.
Yeah, it would be great to have it, though.
Yeah, I know.
That was interesting. It's interesting because Bloomberg is a great, supposedly anti-gun guy, but he's not getting rid of his or his security team, who supposedly probably have guns and everything else.
Yeah, it's interesting. They got something on Jesse Jackson, the new Occupy plan. But I wanted to read another spot, a sociopath.
Jesse Jackson puts his new Occupy plan, have Homeland Security there.
Yeah. Hey, how to spot a sociopath. 10 red flags that could save you from being swept up under the influence of a charismatic nut job.
Here are the 10 signs. Keep going.
The most offensive duties of being an investigative journalist is taking out the trash, exposing lies, fraudsters, con artists, scammers.
Well, let's go down to the 10.
Sure.
10 signs for spotting a sociopath. Sociopaths are charming, like Bill Clinton. Sociopaths have high charisma and tend to attract a following just because people want to be around them. They have a glow about them that attracts people who typically seek guidance or direction. They often appear to be sexy or have a strong sexual attraction. Not all sexy people are sociopaths, obviously, but watch out for the over-the-top sexual appetites and weird fetishes. Number 2, sociopaths are more spontaneous and intense than other people. They tend to do bizarre, sometimes erratic things that most regular people wouldn't do. They are unbound by normal social contracts. Their behavior often seems irrational or extremely risky.
Sociopaths are incapable of feeling shame, guilt, or remorse. Their brains simply lack the circuitry to process such emotions. This allows them to betray people, threaten people, or harm people without giving it a second thought. They pursue any action that serves their own self-interest, even if it seriously harms others. This is why you will find many very successful sociopaths at high level of government and in any nation.
Soci- sociopaths invent outrageous lies about their experience. They widely exaggerate things to the point of absurdity, but when they describe it to you in a storytelling format, for some reason it sounds believable at the time. Sociopaths seek to dominate others and win at all costs. They hate to lose any argument or fight and will viciously defend their web of lies, even to the point of logical absurdity. Sociopaths tend to be highly intelligent. They use their brain power to deceive others rather than empower them. Their high IQs often make them dangerous. This is why many of the best-known serial killers who successfully evaded law enforcement were sociopaths. Sociopaths are incapable of love and entirely self-serving. They may feign love or compassion in order to get what they want, but they don't actually feel love in the way that you or I do.
Sociopaths speak poetically. They are master wordsmiths, able to deliver a running stream of consciousness, monologue that is both intriguing and hypnotic. They are expert storytellers and even poets. As a great example of this in action, watch the interview with Charles Manson on YouTube.
Sociopaths never apologize. They are never wrong. They never feel guilt. They can never apologize. Even if shown proof they are wrong, they will refuse to apologize and instead go on the attack.
Sociopaths are delusional and literally believe that they...
believe that what they say
becomes truth, merely because they say it. Charles Manson, the sociopathic murderer, is famous for saying, "I've never killed anyone. I don't need to kill anybody. I think it. I have it here," pointing to his temple. "I don't need to live in this physical realm."
Okay.
They got him on a video, if you want to see his craziness.
So those are...
And there's another couple. That, how do you spell illusion and get to the truth?
Well, it's after 9 o'clock
and
now.
Tip for exposing sociopaths. Start fact check something they claim. Sociopaths never answer facts. They always attack the messenger. Inventing bizarre tales.
I never had sex with that woman.
Yeah, this guy, Hillbuff. You got a picture of the Hillbuff guy.
Oh, boy, he was bizarre.
Yeah, common theme of poison, sainthood, and redemption. Center their actions around bizarre food or drink theme, demanding their members eat or drink poisonous or highly offensive substances no rational person would otherwise consume. And, he managed to convince 38 fellows to kill themselves by eating applesauce laced with phenobarbital. That was the guy that Heaven's Gate called.
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah. And,
okay.
There's just so many guys. I mean, there's so many crazy guys out there.
Jim Jones?
Yeah.
Yep.
The modern sociopath is a threat to us all. They're not just historical, they're operating all around us. The number of people call, continue to fall for the illusion of a convincing web of lies spun by wordsmithing sociopaths. We operate in almost any area of society. Science, physics, new age circles, fringe health, self-improvement, and even pop the spiritual.
Al Gore, who stuck to his global warming no matter what.
He was a cult head.
Yeah.
Really.
Trying to get to steal people's money. The other thing was the environmental tax, the footprint and all that.
Yeah.
He's nothing but a sociopath, trying to use people and manipulate people.
Well, we're over the line here, but there's 7 rules for personal empowerment without joining a cult.
Something that people can look into. Why don't you just tell people what this is?
Yeah, just go to Natural News. How to spot a sociopath, all right?
10 red flags that could save you from being swept up under the influence of a charismatic nut jobber.
Right. I think how to spot a sociopath would probably get you there. So, but anyway, that's it for tonight, folks. I want to thank you so much for joining us, and I hope you were amused.
Have a great night, folks, and thanks for listening.
Yeah.
Take care. care.
And join us tomorrow when we do union issues and more alternative news. And hope you enjoyed the show.